Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Aramarte Feo on blogtalkradio.com. The views expressed here are not necessarily those of all hosts, guests, or producers, and the show is for a mature audience.
Hello, I'm Stuart Alexander, and welcome once again to the Socialist Insight. And today we have Alan Mackey. He's joining us again on our program. He comes on every other week, and we discuss many interesting topics in regards to how they give a perspective from a left perspective, and topics dealing with the economy, topics dealing with many of the social issues that we are confronted with every day. Alan, again, I'd like to thank you for joining the program today.
Well, thanks for having me, Stuart.
Alan, last week we had a visitor joining our program. It was John Strinka. And what we were discussing last week, we were talking about a subject that we're going to expand on a little bit more today. And that subject is Wall Street gains and working people. And we're going to still work and discuss that's basically the same topic, but what we're going to be delving into a little bit today is a Wall Street crash. Wall Street crash, is it imminent? Because we can see basically what took place in the 20s and what took place in 2008, that many people are not convinced that this the impact of the recession of 2008 that is over. And many Americans that have been in recent surveys, they don't believe that it's over. So that's what we're going to be discussing today. One of the things I like to get into just recently, it was a survey that was conducted, Alan, where it says, it was saying that 54% of Americans believe the economy will either take 6 to 10 years to recover or will not fully recover from the Great Recession. And even a larger share, 60%, believe that the recession permanently changed the normal economic conditions, of this country. Now, even though you see Wall Street saying that when you turn on the news and you look in the newspaper that the stock market is back, but Alan, most Americans don't share that excitement that this economy has rebounded from the recession of 2008.
Well, most Americans, a lot of people that do have stocks have suffered a lot. It's only the very big investors that are making a lot of money, and they always do on recessions and depressions. And I think this is going to continue for a long time. I don't see this economy getting out of trouble. We see what's going on in Cyprus, and it's only an indication of what's going to go on in the rest of the world. And you know, one of the biggest banks in Cyprus has been closed, and one of the other big banks in Cyprus, they're going to be closed, I think, until Thursday or something. And people in Cyprus are limited to how much they can even take out of all their bank accounts. I think it's about $130 at 100 euros.
Right.
I think it's about $130 a day per transaction. And, you know, I think we're going to see this in a lot more countries. Because what's going on in Cyprus is, it's been one of these offshore banking countries. And, we have quite a few of those just off our coast in the Bahamas. And the same thing is going to begin to happen down there. And I think we're going to see a massive economic crash in this country, worse than what the Depression of the 30s was ever like. When it's going to come, who knows, but no, it's coming.
Right, and what we can see, as I mentioned, as I was speaking with you just before the program today, we can see that the Feds, just recently last week, the Feds, they had one of their meetings where they were saying that they wanted to still keep pumping money into this economy to help sustain it. And obviously many people understand that the Feds are pumping money into this economy because much of the world economy is is shored up by the U.S. economy. But we can see that the feds are dumping more than $50 billion a month into this economy to help maintain its viability. But
it's actually up to Alan,
explain where is this eventually going to lead? Because this money is not free money to the U.S. government.
No, the taxpayers end up picking up the tab for this so-called free money. And the banks are going to make lots and lots of money off of the so-called free money on the interest that we, the taxpayers, pay them. And that number is up to $85 billion a month now, I read.
Exactly. It's $85 billion. That's
a
real
month.
Number.
And that's a whole lot of money. And, you know, I think we see, I was just reading an opinion poll in the New York Times, I think it was, and it said the confidence in Barack Obama is about the same as what it is with the Republicans, congressional Republicans, which means that the people don't have any confidence at all that anybody knows what to do about this situation. And that makes it really bad. And they thought that they had levers and things that they could do to manage the economy, and come to find out that they don't, you know, they don't know what to do.
Now, we could see the same thing happening back in the 90s when many of those governments in Central America and South America where they were being propped up. And as you mentioned, the same thing is happening with Cyprus. And we can see that that money is being dumped in by the feds and the central banks to make certain that these economies are shored up. The same thing is happening here in the U.S. The thing is, in Cyprus, it was they had received $10 billion, 10 billion euros for the bailout, and now they were requiring that the government raise 5.8 billion euros to make certain that that they didn't default on their loans. Now, the U.S., the same thing is the feds and the central banks are dumping, as you just mentioned, $85 billion a month. That's well, within a year's time, that'll be over $1 trillion into this economy. It's not doing anything to really shore up this economy, Alan. What it's doing is creating more debt for this economy. So if you look at capitalism, is capitalism working? Is what is taking place on Wall Street, is it working? Alan, it amounts to nothing more than just an illusion.
Yeah, we know it's not working because, you know, the Fed started pumping, I think at first it was like $30 billion a month. Now we're up to $85 billion.
It was $40 billion a month. Now it's double.
Yeah, and which that's not a sign that things are getting better. And we don't know to what extent that the feds are even propping up some of these other countries in Europe and stuff. You know, all this stuff is kept secret. They had a secret meeting in Finland not too long ago. I think it was in this past week, and nobody will say what they talked about. They said that they went cross-country skiing and snowshoeing and stuff, but the real reason they got together is to try and figure out what they're going to do with this economic crisis, and nobody knows. Nobody has any answers.
Right, and as you mentioned, the world is not just here in the U.S., but we're still in a global economic crisis, global, and it's really affecting every country on every continent. We have seen the same thing happen in Greece and Spain and many countries throughout Europe. And now, as we mentioned last week, and when I had John Strinker on the program, it's even affecting many of the Asian countries, such as Japan and also China. So every country is going deeper and deeper into debt. But here are many of these businesses and big corporations that are doing business on Wall Street, and it's like a different world for those companies. Like, you know, everything is grand and the economy is robust, and then we see a lot of people being laid off and the economy is not getting better. But just explain to our listeners, how are these companies still making a profit and doing well when we can see the rest of the world is out of sync?
Well, they're only making a profit because the economy is being propped up to such a large extent. And if the feds here in the United States stop propping up the economy, we would see dozens and dozens of businesses start to collapse, and we'd see massive unemployment worse than what it is right now. And without propping up the economy the way they are, we would have hardly any economy at all.
Exactly.
I think one thing we've got to be careful of is what happened in Cyprus. People are I don't know why this isn't being talked about, but Cyprus had a communist government in power for about 4 or 5 years. And in order, they knew that the things were real bad in Cyprus, so they created an incident, a huge explosion, and then they blamed the communist president for the explosion, and it enabled this right-wing government to come to power in Cyprus. What they were really afraid of, I think, is that the communist government would have started to nationalize the banks there. And I think that's what they're afraid of all over the world. The left
exactly.
is the only ones with real solutions. And, I mean, let's face it. The only solution to this problem is nationalization of the banks, because otherwise we're not even going to know what the real economic situation is unless we have people from the government get in there and find out what's going on in these banks. These bankers.
And Ellen, that's a good point, because that's the thing that banks fear with any country. They don't want those banks in those within those countries to be nationalized. They don't want the people to be in control of their banks. They want to make certain that the governments need to borrow from them, and then they can lend the money to them at an interest.
Yeah, and it's got to get out of hand eventually, no matter how much they try and prop this up. I don't know how they can keep putting this much money into the economy. I mean, they're just printing money. And essentially, you know, then they're talking about starting new wars in Syria and Iran. You know, those wars in those two countries are going to cost us, you know, another trillion or $2 trillion.
Oh, yeah.
And,
exactly.
They'll have to print even more money. Pretty soon, the Fed is going to be printing over $100 billion a month. And there will be no way to pay any of this back. It's just, you know, all these people with credit right now. If you look at any of the papers or anything, you see people filing bankruptcy left and right in this country. The home foreclosures continue. Nobody in government is even trying to stop those home foreclosures. We got this whole credit bubble that's got to burst sometimes, because people without jobs can't pay back the money that they borrowed on these credit cards and everything. So, you know, we've got massive problems ahead of us. And the way I look at it, you know, the only thing for working people to do is to fight for some real basic reforms that's going to help us get through this whole economic mess as we make a transition or revolution from capitalism to some kind of socialism. That's
mm-hmm.
the solution. There are no capitalism has no solutions to any of these problems right now. And
good point that you brought up, Alan. You were talking about how unemployment, we're talking about credit. And first, what I want to do is focus on credit of cities. We have the credit that cities have, local municipalities, even counties, state governments. We have just recently, we see here, one of the articles I was reading, only Wall Street wins in Detroit crisis, reaping $474 million fee. But here we see the economy of Detroit. It is completely in ruins.
Yeah.
We see many of the areas where they can't even have on streetlights and proper sanitation. But this city has borrowed millions and millions of dollars, but Wall Street is still, you know, they're collecting their fees. And
yeah,
but we see this when we look at governments. We see this happening with governments.
Yeah, they say in the city of Detroit that thousands of people have their city water turned off now. They can't even afford to pay for water. And, you know, what's going to happen? You're going to have all kinds of disease and everything.
Right.
You know, it's going to be a terrible situation.
But,
and
but not just in
just
Detroit, but we have it in places in Pennsylvania, in Jersey. But this is happening around the country, where these cities are in such massive debt, monies that have been borrowed for services, and monies are still owed back to banks, the banks that have loaned this money.
Yeah, in Michigan, where they're appointing all these so-called emergency managers, the managers themselves are so corrupt, half of them are being accused of embezzling public funds. And
Exactly. And that's what you have in Detroit.
Yeah, how are you going to solve any problems when you got people like this in charge, you know? Just outright crooks stuffing their pockets at the public expense. And so
now,
it just shows they got no solutions to any problems.
Now, one of the things when I'm looking at is it says a new study reveals widespread pessimism among the American people, even with a strengthening economic recovery. And we see that it's not really a strengthening of an economic recovery. We just saw within the last 3 months when the holidays, and of course the holidays will be coming up this year as well, and Easter and all these other holidays, and people, they don't have the available funds where they can be able to go and spend. So what they're doing is people are just putting money on credit. And one of the things I see is nearly half use money from savings or retirements to make ends meet. And over one-third say they cut back on medical treatment. So what people are doing is, even though we see that the economy, or I should say Wall Street, or the super rich in our society, they're saying everything is great, we can see that working people are having to cut back into their retirements, cut back on their available monies for things that are necessary. They're going into their retirements, they're going into their savings, and this is how they're being able to maintain just some of the meager existence that many of us have today. So you can't really paint a successful picture there that things are going well. Not to mention, Alan, is that when you look at in 2000, in just the last report that they had for the unemployment, they have 7.7% of the American workforce that's reported that are still unemployed. But we know the real numbers are well over 23 million people that are unemployed, not to 12 million, because now they don't even count the numbers. But you get this rosy picture that the economy is recovering, but the economy is not recovering because it's being done on the backs of credit and also people having to sacrifice. What kind of recovery is that?
Well, I haven't heard a single person tell me that the economy is getting better as far as their personal lives are concerned.
I just hear from various reports or whatever, or surveys, as far as speaking with anyone one-on-one, I agree with you. I don't hear anyone saying it's recovered.
No, and it's not going to. I mean, I think most people realize that things in this country aren't going to get any better, that they're just hoping things won't get a whole lot worse and hoping it doesn't make an economy rebound. So people are going to have to start getting together and thinking these things through and what they're going to we're going to do together. It's like Tony Benn, a politician from England, a socialist politician there, has said that it takes collective action on the part of a whole bunch of people if people are going to get real reforms to make their lives better at this point. And I agree with him completely. And I think that's what we got to start looking at, rather than guessing whether the economy is going to collapse or when it's going to collapse. That doesn't do us much good. All we can say is that things aren't going to get any better for working people, and it's up to working people to start fighting for the kind of reforms that are really required in this country. We got to have a moratorium on house foreclosures. We got to have massive jobs creating programs. And the government doesn't seem to want to do any of this. There's no even empathy on the part of this government to solve any of these problems. Obama can get on television, and these Republicans can get on television and talk about jobs, jobs, jobs. Even the Congressional Progressive Caucus, they brought forward this stupid program that they called Progressive, and they talked about creating 7 million jobs through small businesses. You know, Somebody has to be a real fool to believe that small business in this country is going to create 7 million new jobs. You know, that's ridiculous to even think that that was going to happen. So, you know, none of these people have any solutions. So unless we bring forward the solutions of a WPA program, a CCC program, the Civilian Conservation Corps, the Comprehensive Employment and Training Act, bring that back, and start to build programs around solutions to people's problems like health care. You know, we need a national public health care program in this country, and that would create 12 million new jobs. And more than anything, we need peace in this country. It's these wars that are causing so much of the it's exacerbating the economic problem that's already there anyways. And it can't go on.
Well, let me ask you something, because you're talking about all these programs that need to be created. If we have the feds, which are dumping $85 billion a month into this economy, $85 billion a month, Alan, why don't we have full employment right now?
Well, we should.
Billion. Most people don't understand that creates a lot of jobs.
Yeah, it could. It could create a lot of jobs. But with all the money that they've put into the economy so far, you know, we should have full employment if that money was really creating jobs, but it's not. These parasites on Wall Street stick that money in their pockets so quick we don't even know what's happening to that money. If anybody asks any of these government officials, you can call your own congressperson and ask them, where is this money going? And they treat you like some kind of fool, like you don't even have a right to know the answers to these things. You know, what happens to $85 billion a month? Call your congressman or United States senator and ask, where is that $85 billion going? Nobody will tell you. They won't tell you anything.
There's no accountability.
No, none. So, you know, as far as I can see, we got a situation all across this country like they have in Detroit. All these big shots are just stuffing this money in their pockets left and right. Anybody that can get their hands on these public funds is stealing them. That's what we got, because, I mean, common sense tells you. They've pumped this, you know, more than, now I think it's up to, what, $2 trillion, including the bailouts and everything, and the $85 billion a month. I mean, common sense says you can hand that money to people and just ask them to go out and do a few things to better their community, and we would actually have something. We don't know, at this point, we don't know where any of that money has gone.
Well, people and many of our listeners may be aware, since Obama took office in 2009, more than $3 trillion has been dumped into this economy. And with that much money, first it started out with his $787 billion stimulus program, which even Obama essentially said that was a joke. He said, well, the jobs weren't really shovel ready. And then the feds went on the spending spree where they started dumping hundreds of billions of dollars, and now they have dumped more than $3 trillion into this economy, yet we still have a situation where we have massive unemployment. And as you mentioned, I think you had mentioned when I spoke to you a couple of weeks ago, they are, you know, their constituents are the people there on Wall Street. They don't represent working people. And we still have massive unemployment in this country. But we should be able to have jobs based on the amount of money that is being spent by the feds and the central banks in this country. To the contrary, what we see is money being spent in this country, and it's only expanding the military might of this country. It's only going toward defense spending, but it's not creating real jobs for working people.
You know, people are going to have to say very militantly in a united way, you know, if this government can spend this much money killing people, they've got to be able to spend at least a similar amount of money helping people. And this is the way we're going to have to start thinking, because otherwise these people on Wall Street and the politicians who are bribed by these people on Wall Street, they have no empathy for a working person. You call up any politician and you ask them, you're talking about jobs all the time. Where are the jobs? And they'll tell you, be patient. Well, you know, the people on Wall Street obviously aren't patient, because they're grabbing this money as quick as they can. And what we got essentially is a massive transfer of public capital and social capital that's being transferred from the public treasury to the pockets of these billionaires on Wall Street. That's
unlike any other time in history.
Yeah. There's never been such a theft in a, you know, I saw a cartoon with a person walking to a bank, and the person behind the counter at the bank is the one that's pointing the gun at the person coming
right
into the bank, you know. And then there's a politician standing behind them with a gun to him, you know.
Exactly. So, I saw the same cartoon.
Yeah, so it's just thieves that are robbing us blind, and we're getting
right
nothing from any of this money. It's a terrible situation. You know, if this would have happened during the 1930s, where the money that was spent and that wasn't going to jobs programs, you know, there would have been a revolution for sure at that point. And now people are trying to figure out what's going on, and none of us really know. We don't know where this $85 billion a month is going, and it's a shame that people aren't asking for some accountability. You know, it's just like they pop off these figures, and they've got nothing to show for it, you know. Heck, if a government is printing $85 billion a month, they should at least be able to show that, you know, there's several hundred thousand jobs a week being created.
Right, exactly.
And they can't. They claim that there's 200,000 jobs or so being created. But what is that when you consider $85 billion a month?
Well, $85 billion a month, Alan, we should be seeing people that have affordable housing in this country. We should see something being done where the homeless, where their shelters are being provided so people, we can get our working people off the street. We should see things happening for the vets. $85 billion a month. We should see programs coming up to help vets. We should see people that are hungry. We should see them, you know, something being done where we don't see food lines, but we see where people can go and purchase various goods in the stores and like that, and the food lines disappear. We should see homes being built. We should see highways being repaired. We should see within our communities, Alan, we should see jobs, 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 and we're not seeing it. People need to understand that $85 billion a month, that's a lot of money going into the economy. You're talking about putting millions and millions of people to work with that type of investment, but we don't see it. We see a very few people benefiting from it, creating very huge incomes, big CEOs and executives on Wall Street, but we don't see those jobs being created. It is possible, and working people are not demanding accountability. There's no accountability at all. Even the people, as you mentioned, in Washington, they can't give account what is happening with these type of funds. And they should. They should be screaming to the president. The president should be screaming at Congress, and working people should be in the streets saying, what is going on with this money that eventually we're going to have to pay back?
Yeah. People are going to have to demand that accountability and that money be spent properly on the needs of people. And if that doesn't happen, the situation is only going to get worse and worse. And, you know, I really don't think that capitalism has a future at all anymore. It's just
about
how far.
The only thing capitalism I can see in the future is enslaving millions of people, because it's already – Alan, it's already enslaving people. We can see students. The student loan debt in this country now is over $1.1 trillion that students will be responsible for paying back within the lifetime of their careers, lifetimes.
I saw one study that said that because of the high student debt, you now have a whole generation of students that can't buy homes and they can't even buy cars. Because
they can't buy anything.
Yeah. And, you know, this is probably a first that this has ever happened in this country. And you got these people with degrees and everything. I mean, you know, they can't get a home. They can't get a car. They can't get a job. You know, what future is there for them? And to think that things are just going to somehow automatically get better. It's just ridiculous to even believe that.
Alan, what I want to do is I want to talk a little bit about a program that you represent, because we want to also look at how can we bring about a change. Like I say, $85 billion, you know, we need to have programs where we can be able to start investing. If we're going to invest on Wall Street, we need to invest in our communities. But you represent the New Progressive Alliance. Tell our listeners a little bit about that program. I'm also a part of that myself. But I want you to explain what the New Progressive Alliance is all about. And we're going to talk about what the New Progressive Alliance, where they stand on certain things such as labor, where they stand on things with the economy, and where we could have a viable works program, jobs program, and deal with the social needs of our communities. But tell us a little bit about the New Progressive Alliance.
Okay, the New Progressive Alliance, it started as part of a discussion that was taking place on Fire Dog Lake. And what we've got now is we're in the process of setting up what we call state liaisons across this country. So we're trying to get people take this movement from the internet to get it right on the ground. You might say boots on the ground. I guess that's a popular saying. And we're getting people to start taking action in their states and local communities. And we're asking people to get involved around our 10-point program that we think will turn this country around, has a real chance.
Do you have any information that you can share on the 10-point program right available to you?
Sure. We think that right at the top of the list, that everything revolves around peace. We don't think we're going to be able to solve any problems in this country when the wealth of this nation is being squandered on wars, because we might as well take that wealth and just dump it into the ocean. You know, would you go out to the end of a pier and take the money out of your wallet and just throw it out into the ocean? No. And yet that's what we're doing when we spend all this money on wars and militarism. So unless we can stop that, we're not going to, unless we can stop these wars and all this military spending, we're not going to be able to do the things that people need. And on top of what people need, we've got the whole environmental situation. We've got climate change, solving the problems that are creating this global warming would create millions of jobs in this country.
Now, Alan, explain, you know, to some of our listeners that don't understand, how real is global warming?
Well, it's very real. I mean, all scientific opinion is pretty much unanimous, except for a few corporate scientists that are being paid by corporations to tell a different story. And, you know, the climate change itself is possibly more serious than any other problem that we have, because there's nothing we can really do about it if we don't start taking action now. And, you know, Mother Nature isn't very forgiving when you mistreat her.
And so two things we're looking at here. We can create jobs instead of investing in wars. We can invest in peace. Jobs can be created. The second thing is the environment. We can invest in jobs and can clean our we can make investments that will help to clean our environment. Again, we're talking about where can we spend $85 billion a month. So those are two things. One, investing in wars, you know, well, all we have to do there is stop investing in war. So that's a big gain for the country financially. What is the third one on your list, Alan?
Well, that was actually the third thing. The second thing on our list is full employment at a living wage. But, you know, we have to talk about full employment in the context of peace, and we've got to talk about full employment in the context of what we need to do in this country, and that involves saving the environment. And,
now, when NPA, when they say full employment, what do they mean? Are they talking about full employment where people work, you know, where they have full-time jobs?
No, yeah.
Or is it full employment where everyone is working?
Well, where everyone is working at a full-time job that wants a job. And
okay.
We're not talking about a full employment where, you know, like the United States government says full employment is 4 or 5%. Now they're saying it's the normal unemployment is 7%. We're talking about full employment. Anybody that wants a job, that wants to work, would have a job at a decent living wage. And what we mean by a decent living wage is that a person is able to earn a living where they can go and buy the things that they need to live a fairly decent life. Most people in this country can't do that right now. If it weren't for credit, I mean, we'd have, we've already got 40 million people living in poverty. If it weren't for credit, we would have easily 80 or 90 million people living in poverty. So
That's a good point that you're making when you say full employment. And we're talking about good jobs. Alan, I remember back in the 70s when I took a job working for Safeway Stores. And when I took the job, I went there. I was asking them if they had a job available as a courtesy clerk because I said, I work part-time as a courtesy clerk. They said, well, we have full-time positions for clerks. And I said, well, I don't know if I want to work as a clerk. I just want a part-time job. They said, well, our immediate demand and our immediate need is for clerks full-time. So I took a job, worked for Safeway, working as a clerk, not as a courtesy clerk. But they had a shortage of people that were willing to take those jobs. The other thing is, also in the 70s, they had thousands and thousands of jobs available in the aircraft industry and also in the automobile industry here in Burbank, California, and Southgate, where people could go into assembly. But these were good-paying jobs. So when we talk about full employment, we talk about full employment like, you know, where people can go to work and receive a decent income. We're not talking about where they're working at minimum wage and working 4 or 5 hours a day.
Right. Well, we have to realize what goes along with living wage jobs and full employment. What we have to realize is that, these jobs aren't going to just come out of thin air, that private industry is not going to be employing people, that we're talking about the need for government to create programs, solving the problems of the people, putting millions of people to work. And
programs like affordable housing.
Right.
Health care, making certain that we take care of our infrastructure. The government investing in creating jobs, correct?
Correct. And, see, this is where we differ with the Keynesians. The Keynesians, they only want to invest to get the consumer market going again.
Right, exactly.
And this is the real bone of contention that's taking place in this country right now. And this will not solve any problems. It's been shown already the politicians cannot solve the problems of unemployment this way. It's going to take
Keynesian economics, it works for corporate America. It works for the big corporations around the world. It doesn't work for to create real jobs for working people. That's not what it's designed to do.
No.
And ultimately, that's what it will do. It will benefit the wealthy elite in a society. It doesn't benefit working people. It actually is just to make certain that you have a workforce that can make certain that they deliver for basically as only as an element for production. That's it. But not where they can be able to meet their social needs.
Production for a consumer market. And
exactly, for a consumer market.
We got to start looking at production to solve human and social problems. This is, any kind of society that calls itself a humane society has to look at first providing the basic necessities of life for people. After all, most of us working people, we really don't buy, when it comes to consumer spending, our consumer spending is spending on basic necessities of life. And this is what we got to do. So we got to start creating government programs like a national health care program that puts millions of people to work, providing the American people with free health care. The people working in these programs will then have money to spend, and they'll be spending their money on what they need to live a halfway decent life, and not just on trivial consumer items that nobody really needs. So, we got to take a whole new look at what our society is doing as far as production and everything. We have
I'm looking at $85 billion, and we're looking at potentially $3 trillion that has been wasted over the first term and also into the second term of this President Obama. But we're talking about a lot of money here. a lot of money that can create real good paying jobs right in our communities, starting, as I mentioned, repairing cities such as Detroit, repairing cities that are there on the East Coast and here in California, cities that are in debt, counties and state governments that are currently experiencing massive debt, $85 billion, trillions of dollars that are not, that we cannot see, that are being, that would be, should be invested in our communities. What is the next thing on your list, Alan?
The next thing,
because I want to go through this 10-point program that you have, which is an excellent program where we can't talk about just the problems, because obviously we see capitalism is the big problem.
Right.
But then we can dissect it and see what can we do to really change, bring about real change in our society. What is the next thing on your list, Alan?
Creating a real social safety net for people.
Good. Explain that. That's a very good one that everyone should understand, a social safety net.
We want to expand and defend Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, unemployment insurance. We think that people should have unemployment compensation from the day they're laid off until the time they get a job. You know, we think that health care is a major, major thing, and that's point five on our agenda. Because not only, you know,
What was the second one? I missed that.
Medicare for all.
Oh, Medicare for all. Okay.
And so whether it's a Medicare for all, which would be like a single payer system, would create around 3 million jobs. A national public health care system would create around 12 million jobs. So, you know, you take your pick. Either one is going to create jobs, and both health care reforms will make life better for people and protect their health.
That point five would actually put over half the nation, just Medicare for all would put over half the nation back to work.
Well, I don't know about half the unemployed, you mean?
Half the unemployed.
Yeah, well, a Medicare for all single-payer system would put about a fifth of the unemployed people to work.
Well, you say it would put around 12 million people.
Yeah, a national public health care system where you have a system where the doctors and the nurses and everybody are government employees, and you have community health care centers in every community and neighborhood in every city, would be employing around 12 million people. But even that would cost a lot less than these wars are costing us.
Right.
And
Alan, we had something along those lines back in the 60s and 70s, and all those programs, they disappeared. You remember those?
Sure, the community action programs. And they started putting prenatal centers in all these community action programs where in every, mostly in the poor neighborhoods, they would have a community action program where they had taken over either abandoned schools or abandoned buildings or build even new buildings in some cases, and put these centers in to help people in a lot of different ways with their employment problems. They taught them how to create resumes, and they provided a lot of basic health care needs that you would get just going to a doctor, like your immunization shots and prenatal care. And then after the baby is born, they provided care for newborn babies and everything. Almost all of this is gone now in our country.
Right. And Ellen, what I want our listeners to understand is that we have, since Obama took office, we have well over $5 trillion that has been, I should say, blown some type of way that even Washington, they can't give accountability to where those funds have, where they have gone.
Yeah.
But these are funds that actually can be used to create jobs, not to mention much of the monies that are not even reported, that we don't even understand what is out there. That number, when I say $5 trillion, it could be double that amount.
Yeah,
but these are monies that can be used, monies that are being spent on wars, monies that are being spent on bailouts, monies that are being spent on other governments, where they can be used to create real jobs. We've already mentioned five of them here. We're going to get into the other ones, because this is a program, folks, that really can create real jobs for working people. And we're not talking about jobs where it can meet some of your needs, but it'll meet the needs, the basic needs for working families.
Well, we're on this issue of the social safety net and Medicare for all and everything, you know, someplace between there falls in education. And just one example of what's really sinister going on in this country. Right now I'm down here in, near the Twin Cities, St. Paul and Minneapolis, and there's a little community south of where I am right now called Forest Lake, Minnesota. And the people in Forest Lake, Minnesota, have to pay $2,000 a year to send their children to kindergarten.
$2,000 a year?
Yeah. You know,
wow.
I don't know. You know, I took it for granted. You know, I went to kindergarten, and my mom and dad never had to pay. And you know,
it was eight of us, and we didn't pay a dime.
Yeah. I just think eight kids in a family having to pay $2,000 a year, you know. This is a terrible situation where people got to now pay to send their kids to kindergarten.
And not only did we not have to pay, we were instructed that you must come down and enroll your kids.
Yeah, exactly. Here in the whole state of Minnesota, kindergarten isn't even mandatory for the schools to have anymore.
Wow.
So the state legislature is fighting about if they're going to have state mandated and state financed kindergarten, you know. And here you have Obama talking about you know, preschool and everything, and we don't even have kindergarten here in the state of Minnesota. This is,
Alan, you know, I just
want to
pause for a second. I want to pause for a second so people can understand what you're saying. That when you really think about it, and some people think that capitalism works. You have to really see that capitalism does not work. We see where it's a complete failure.
Yeah,
I mean, we're talking about education. We're talking about the future of our communities, the future of our country. And here, people are having to fork monies out of their pocket because, you know, just to send our kids to kindergarten, they have to fork hundreds of thousands of dollars in some cases, where people can be able to afford an education, and the nation is strapped with $1.1 trillion in debt because now our kids are having to pay for their own education with these loans. It's not working.
No, you know, the people in this community, if you pick up the newspaper, along with reading that, you know, people got to pay $2,000 a year to send their kids to kindergarten, there's 10, 15 pages of nothing but home foreclosures. You know, are people who are losing their homes going to be able to pay to send their kids to kindergarten? No. You know, this is the insanity of what's happening in our society. And the politicians aren't even dealing with that. And if they're not dealing with it, people are going to have to step forward and organize and start to deal with these problems, because nobody should have to pay to send their kids to a kindergarten. This should be a very basic human right. If you told that to people in most countries, they would probably think that you were lying to them. They wouldn't
believe
in the richest country in the world that people have to pay $2,000 a year to send their kids to kindergarten. You look at a little country like Finland or Canada, people take it for granted that their children go to kindergarten for free.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And if this is happening in one community, I wonder how many other communities across this country this is happening in. You know, I wouldn't normally pay that much attention because I don't have any small children of kindergarten age. You know, I've got grandkids that go to school in Canada, and they would never think of having to pay for anything for school. You know, all their books and everything are free. So,
and hopefully our young adults listening and our young adults in this country are adhering to this, that, you know, they should not take this for granted, that they should be paying. They should not be paying.
No.
Alan, we have a few more minutes here. I want to get into the other points that
okay.
you have, because today we have Alan Mackey. He comes on our program every 2 weeks from the Socialist Insight. And today our program, we're focusing on Wall Street gains and working people. Is another Wall Street crash imminent? But we can see the direction that capitalism is going, that a crash for our economy is imminent because with this reckless spending. But we can look at other solutions, and the solutions cannot be found in capitalism. Capitalism will never work for this country. It will never work for working people. We have gotten into some very interesting areas of How can we really create jobs? We can create jobs with peace, cleaning our environment, investing in a clean environment, full employment, a safety net, Medicare for all. Alan, we have several other points. I want you to bring those out as well.
Sure. Another point on our agenda is fair trade. And fair trade, if we had real fair trade with other countries in the world where people were paid real living wages in those countries, we would have a better chance of getting full employment here in this country too, because one of the reasons why we got such high unemployment is because the big Wall Street companies, they've fled overseas to produce things where they can get cheap labor and cheap natural resources. And they're taking advantage of working people in those countries, and they're bringing all those things that are manufactured over there back to this country to sell at a very high price. And so fair trade is an important aspect of
and that's a good point, because people, our listeners, need to understand when we talk about fair trade, many of these companies are moving to other markets and other countries to do business because they can get that labor for 10 cents on the dollar.
Right.
So they're benefiting, but they're benefiting with loss of jobs here in the U.S.
The example I like to use there is the collection agency that's owned by Xerox collecting on student debt. And they're located in the Bahamas with thousands of people working at their call centers trying to convince people to pay on their student loans. And this company gets anywhere from 40 to 65% or so off of everything they collect. And now we have students that are out of college. You know, they can't even get jobs making the calls to ask other students to pay on their debt because all those jobs have been shipped to another country, you know, where they get cheap labor.
Exactly.
And that brings us to another point on our agenda, human rights and civil liberties.
And one other point I want to mention is right here in the city, down the ways from where I live, right here in Hemet, they had one of the large hotels. They had reservations where people went into a call center and they set up reservations. They had approximately 300 people that were employed in that center. Every time you went there, the parking lot was full of people that made reservations for them, people throughout the country and other parts of the world. And then they shut that down and moved that call center, I believe it was to India. And subsequently, all those people that were employed in the area of Hemet and Homeland and parts of Marietta, they lost their jobs and were placed on the unemployment office. So when you say fair trade, you have to consider what's fair about that. You know, we need to have fair trade. What is the next one on your list, Ellen?
Human rights and civil liberties. And one of the main
big
things.
Big one, very big.
You know, one of the main things that we're concerned about is the loss of rights for working people with all this right to work legislation. And then
explain to people what right to work, the impact that has.
Well, it's the main impact is that it lowers everybody's standard of living, because when a shop or factory is organized, people don't have to belong to the union anymore. Right now, most places, most states, you have what they call the closed shop, where if the union wins an election and you have union representation, everybody pays their union dues and everybody's in the union. Well, under right to work, people can choose whether they want to be a member of the union or not, which essentially makes the union pretty much useless.
And here
in Minnesota doesn't have right to work, but North Dakota does next door. And what we're seeing is that along in the Red River Valley, along the Red River, where you have North Dakota on one side and Minnesota on the other side, a lot of these businesses set up like American Crystal Sugar, and they'll hire people from both Minnesota and North Dakota. And now you got 1,300 people that are locked out of their jobs at American Crystal Sugar. And just recently, the courts ruled that the workers from North Dakota could get food stamps and stuff and unemployment compensation, and they weren't allowed to get that for over a year. So, that's a right to work state, and along with right to work legislation comes, you know, attacks, other attacks on living standards of working people, like you don't get food stamps, you don't get unemployment under a lot of conditions. And
right.
then on
exactly.
top of all that, with workers' rights, you know, literally tens of millions of people are forced to work under terms of what they call at-will employment, where employers don't have to explain why they hire people, and then employers don't have to explain why they fire people. And we think there should be just cause employment. In other words, if an employer is going to fire somebody, they should have to state their reason, and there should be a just reason why they're firing somebody. They should have to state a reason why they hire people. Because, you know, when somebody walks through the door, if your skin's a color that an employer doesn't like, all they have to say is, we're not going to hire you. They don't have to explain why they're not hiring that person. So,
and, Alan, we have around two more minutes where we can get into. I want to hit those other three points of this 10-point program with the new Progressive Alliance. What are those other three points? We're going to make sure we squeeze those in because I want people to understand what this program is about.
We're calling for a real election reform that's publicly financed elections and no outside money coming in. Number nine is corporate accountability and reform, where corporations have to be totally accountable and open in everything that they do as far as with the communities and everything. And infrastructure investment and ownership. In other words, we need to build a lot of things in this country, everything from schools to healthcare centers, and you know, we think a lot of these things should be publicly owned. We're not totally opposed to private ownership, but we think that public ownership is the way we're going to have to probably end up going, because private ownership doesn't want to do things that benefit the people.
A lot of these infrastructure programs, they should be owned by the public. The public initially invested, public funds were invested to make those things happen, and eventually they were just turned over to private enterprise. So, Alan, this is a very good program, and we're going to save one program where we're just going to focus on the new Progressive Alliance, because we don't always want to focus on what the problems are, because we understand what the problem is. The problem is capitalism. It's a complete failure. It does not work. But we understand that we're not just talking about solutions, but solutions that make sense. And how those solutions make sense is we need to reinvest. We need to – these monies that are being wasted on wars and monies that are being wasted on big corporations – and just for the few in our society, how we can take these hundreds of billions and trillions of dollars and be able to create real good-paying jobs. How can people get involved with the new Progressive Alliance?
Well, they can look at our website to start with, and on the website is an application they can fill out to volunteer as a state liaison. And, you know, our first goal is to create these build state liaisons up in every state that we can, so that we have people that are actively engaged in their own communities. We think that a big part of the solution to our problems is just to get people to talk to one another about the problems that they're having. You know, get people together around your kitchen table and have coffee or tea and a little snack or something. Or, you know, with summer coming up, we'll be getting people together around campfires and stuff and start talking about our problems. And this is the first step towards solving any problems. People, they have to become aware of what the problems actually are, and they have to make a conscious decision of what they want to do to solve these problems.
Well, again, Alan, I'd like to thank you for joining the program, The Socialist Insight. We look forward to having you back on in 2 weeks. And, Alan, you're an outstanding guest. We look forward to having you to join us once again. Once again, that's Alan Mackey, and you can find him also on Facebook. Thanks again for joining us.
Yep. Thanks for having me, Stuart.